Welcome back, Amazon sellers, to another exciting episode of our podcast. Today, we have two special guests, Brian and Joe, better known online as Coffee and Commerce, independent sellers that first met online and have formed an Amazon Business Alliance. Join us as Brian and Joe share how they collaborate on various Amazon projects while working full-time jobs, their networking tips, and how to scale up. Check it out. Welcome to the next Amazon Top Seller Podcast. Stay updated with the latest Amazon news and learn the nitty-gritty of selling on Amazon through BeCool's years of experience in the Amazon world. I'm Nick, and I'm the host of this podcast brought to you by the fantastic Amazon experts at BeCool. Let's start our journey to become the next Amazon Top Seller.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today, BeCool invited Brian and Joe, known as Coffee and Commerce. They started selling on Amazon a few years back, and now they're helping many other sellers through their YouTube channel. Today, they'll share how they collaborate as an Amazon duo and how they navigate within the Amazon space. Let's welcome Brian and Joe to our channel today.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Samuel? How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great here. Nice to see you guys. Now, before we continue here a little bit, could you both introduce yourself, starting from Joe, and then how did you guys, you know, meet each other?
Yeah, so I'm Joe. Some people know me as Joe Mazan. That kind of started as a joke amongst friends a year or so ago, and it's kind of grown into its own little life. You know, average Joe? Nope, it's Joe Mazan. So no, just, so I'm from upstate New York. I live in central New York, Finger Lakes region. And as you mentioned, been doing Amazon now a couple of years. 2023 was actually our first full year without something happening. So 22 would have been our first year, but I had a family illness that took me away for about 4 months to take care of someone. And so for about 4 months in 22, we did 5 months really, we didn't get to operate. So 23 was our first full year, had a blast. And Brian, I'll tell how we met. So Brian and I met through a Discord that Brian actually started, and he reached out through, forget, we were in a social media, maybe a Facebook group together, and Facebook group. And I interacted, and Brian loved my haircut, he said. So he said, I like this guy with the cool haircut. I want him in our group. But something like that. Brian reached out. And I'd say almost instantly, Brian and I became friends. I don't know if that's a, Brian will agree with that, but I feel like we were.
Are you still friends after collaborating?
We're working through it.
I think there's days Brian gets frustrated with me. Brian can work at a much higher rate of speed than I can. He's half my age probably. he's a whiz. So, but we met through Brian's Discord group, which is really an awesome group, but he's really built something there, and it's a free group. There's folks from beginning sellers to multi-million dollar sellers. And it doesn't matter how much you sell or.
Yeah, actually, so, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I'm Brian. I started selling a couple years ago now. Didn't really take it seriously though, until this past year when I started an LLC and my money where my mouth is a little bit. So I invested some of my wife and I's money into it to get it running. And thankfully within that first year, I completely was able to take that money back out, take it back for myself. So grew it from there, really started this whole last year, grew, like Joe said, networking with other sellers. That's probably one big thing we'll kind of talk about here today. You know, me and Joe really, really enjoy networking with other sellers. And we figured out that that is really the best way to continue to grow and just continuing to work together with other people and share knowledge between each other. If you don't do that, it's just really hard and it's a really lonely business. And so really getting into Facebook groups, meeting people, those are just the kinds of things that led us to meet each other and, you know, has gotten to the point where we're at now, you know?
Yeah. And you know, Samuel, the first time we met you out in Columbus, that from the Discord group, we all met in person for the first time there. And how many people, Brian, from the, like, we had people, I mean, there was, seven to 10 different that none of us had ever met before. And we all met in person and hung out for a few days together. And from the times I can remember, it was a lot of fun.
How do you guys collaborate?
I'd say specifically like Brian and I, and we've kind of formed, let's call it an alliance. We formed in the last, Brian, how many months has it been? Half a year?
I would say maybe. We really started in the past 4 months or so. We really started working together.
Yeah, 4 or 5. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we've joined forces. Literally, we share our team. We have a team of assistants. I don't like the word virtual assistant. I just don't prominent word in this industry, but teammates. So we've combined our forces together. So we have three teammates together now at focusing on different aspects of the business, whether it's from admin work or it's wholesale sourcing. If it's Brian's very convincing sometimes, and he talked me to diving deeper back into an OA project as well this year, because I had kind of withdrawn from OA and was doing more wholesale. My focus for the last 6 to 7 months has really been brand direct. I've really been trying to work directly with some brands. For me, I see that being my future. We kind of joined forces on a lot of this stuff. And just as early as yesterday, I secured us a new brand direct deal with a small company out of Florida. And it's got some really exciting stuff to come with it. And that just happened yesterday. So we've already been texting. Brian and I probably talk every single day.
Literally,
we talk every single day, and we're bouncing ideas, or one of us comes up with a great idea and we spit it out, and then the next one fires back, you know, his version of that idea. And it seems to work really well so far. So if it's working, let's keep doing it. So yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, we talk a ton. We have a shared private Discord just for our own team that Brian put it all together, because he's much, much better with the technology than I am. So just really, really a good dynamic duo here.
So one of the advantages by collaborating, you can also share some resources, including the assistants that you guys work together with, as well as, you know, being able to contact brands directly. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, maybe from Brian's point or from Joel, like for this new brand that you guys brought on, like what was the process in getting that brand on board?
Well, I kind of did that. So this is a good storytelling here, Sam. So I'm kind of known for finding stuff where it doesn't exist. I don't know how else would you explain it, Brian, right? To tell you the truth, I stopped by the mechanic shop that works on my vehicles. And I know the mechanic, great guy. He owns a beautiful shop. And just talking to him on one of my daughter's cars that they're always breaking down or something with the kids, you know? And he says something to me about, you know, business. How's Amazon doing? I'm like, it's great, you know? And he's like, yeah, no, we got to talk about something. And I was telling him, yeah, my buddy Brian's kind of just introduced some different barbecue type products, some sauces and spice. And he's like, oh, you like hot sauce? Oh, I just let it out. But he's like, you like that? He's like, come on out here. I'm in a mechanic. He opens up his cabinet and he's got boxes of hot sauces. And he's like, try some of these here. They're $5 a bottle, whatever the price was. Don't quote me. And I said, what is this? He goes, it's my son's neighbor. They live down in Florida and he's been building this company from the ground up, and he does this and he does this. It's just, and I was like, that's really impressive. Is he sold on Amazon? He goes, well, no, that's what I was telling you about. You should talk to this guy. And I'm not joking that later that day, he texts me the gentleman's info. I've been traveling, haven't been able to follow up. Just yesterday, I did the follow up and reached out to the gentleman. His first question was, I've been waiting to hear from you. They told me about it. I've been waiting. We talked for about an hour, and his words were, he goes, you're my new best friend.
Oh, wow.
That's how the call ended. So this is a product that's not on Amazon. So this is going to be from the ground up, and it's really interesting. And there's some stuff that I don't, because it's his business, I don't want to share yet, because he's working on some projects. And if those things come to fruition, this could be really, really big, because his product is a food product, but it also has a general merchandise stuff that comes with it. So it's not just the sauces and barbecue sauce and spices. He's got other items that come with it, and it's really cool. So we just hit it off. We both were veterans. We joked about our time in the service, and we connected. And that is typically how it goes for me. It's weird. I know that we just kind of instantly became friends, and he's ready for me to send over the paperwork for an exclusive, and we're going to get them up and running and kind of run with it. So really excited. Brian and I haven't even had really a phone conversation about it yet. It was all text messages, I think late last night. New. So yeah, it's all real new.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, like being able to find brands when you are in different places, like you never really know, like, you know, how things connect and opportunities are there, you know, when you go out and grasp them and, you know, you make the contact and build this new relationship. So yeah, like that's pretty, you got referred from your friend and you were interested and your friend trusted you, you know, it's gone a long way. So that's another reason, you know, networking is so important that you mentioned earlier. Which business models do you guys prefer? You know, there's retail arbitrage, there's online arbitrage. You talk a little bit about wholesale, and there's even private label. And then we'll start with Brian on this. Like, which model do you prefer?
I prefer hands off, not touching stuff, send it to a prep center. So at least in my mindset, I really like the OA stuff where I buy it, send it off, and forget about it. And the prep center deals with it, sends it in, and it's all good. Since Joe and I started working collaboratively together, actually, Joe is kind of the opposite side. He likes RA, and he likes wholesale, brand direct type stuff, where I'm a little bit more focused on the OA side. So that's kind of, I think, one reason why we mesh really well together, maybe work together. I mean, there's different things for different people, and you just got to find what works for you, you know, and get out there and try the different things. You're never going to know which thing you like the best until you just go try the different methods out. And then, you know, you're going to naturally go towards one or the other. And then once you start networking, you can build relationships like Joe and I have together with other people and start working together and share your knowledge. And okay, you handle these more aspects of it, and I can share these products that I found with you as well. And you can work together and build stuff together. So that's what I think is really cool about all the different methods of doing it. You don't have to necessarily pick one. You may pick one that you like best. However, if you have people surrounding you in your network, you can still work to kind of do more than just that one method. At least that's my opinion about it. What do you think, Joe?
So last year, I said I was done doing, you know, I'm like, I'm okay. I've learned, I've done a lot of RA and done some OA, and I'm kind of moving more into wholesale and dealing with brands directly as much as I can. And I finally realized I can't give up RA. It's an addiction. It's harder for me to stop doing retail arbitrage than it is for me to stop eating junk food. I enjoy it thoroughly. I'm out in Texas right now, and not joking, I went into a store in Texas and I messaged Brian something. Hey, I'm doing, he goes, you're doing retail arbitrage, aren't you? And I'm like, no, I'm not. But then my mind clicked. I know some Amazon guys in the area of Texas I'm in right now. Find something. I'm texting my buddy a message that I found, you know, XYZ. And I found myself walking around the store the other night looking for stuff. But so I'll always kind of do that a little bit just because I enjoy it. It's almost therapeutic to me. I know it's weird, but my big focus, one of my head virtual team member purchasing for me. So I'm giving her a limit and a dollar amount, and she sends me a couple text messages quick and says, what do you think? And so that's kind of something Brian and I are teaming up together because he's really strong in that aspect. Backside, right? The wholesale and the brand direct, good at going out and meeting people and finding places. So that's where I think I come in, like finding this new company literally yesterday. And that to me is wholesale is a lot of fun. Wholesale works great. And like I said, really brands and working directly with the owners of brands is awesome.
What I've heard is that for retail arbitrage, usually you might be able to get a little bit more profit for retail arbitrage, and you might be able to, you might be able to get the same item over again. Whereas in online arbitrage, there might be a special coupon, a special deal, and you can have a limited amount that you could purchase. And then for wholesale, the profit margins might be lower, but you can get them at larger volumes. What are your thoughts about that? Is that on point, or it really depends from your experience?
I would agree in general that that tends to be the case, but once you pick a method, I think that you can figure out ways to improve on those aspects. So for instance, OA, one thing that I would encourage everybody to do from day one, keep track of every single OA item you buy. When you buy it, maybe export it into a Google Sheet and build yourself a database. And then maybe you don't have virtual assistants right now, but when you do, you can have them go through your old leads in there, and one day they may be profitable again. That same sale may come around again. I know people who even go so far as to say, hey, this sale is this time of the year, and they associate all these leads in this one sheet to that sale at this store. And a lot of these sales are cyclical. They come again and again. So that's the biggest thing, at least for OA personally. It's like, because I've learned a lot about it, is build yourself a database. And over time, I agree, in the short term, it does seem like it can be that way where, you know, it may be, oh, you've got this one shot to buy something, and then, okay, you got to move on to the next thing. But I do think that there is opportunity to come back to it later on if you take the right steps.
So the tip there is to make sure to track those special deals that you got, and then you can go back to them to see if the same deals happen, or maybe it's a seasonal thing that goes on every season at a certain time. And this way you can actually get the same discounts. It'll be much faster than looking for completely new deals.
100%.
Yeah, and then 100%. Okay. And what are your thoughts, Joel?
Yeah, I think you kind of summed it up. Your averages are right about what you said, RA versus OA and wholesale. I think RA, I enjoy it because it's almost an instant satisfaction there. I mean, I have lived in and bought in RA items, listed them for sale in the store and had them selling. There were some items between one I picked up, and I've been able to find RA items. When I buy RA, I'm not typically buying five of something or four of something. I'm finding RA items that we can get quantities. In fact, there's an RA item I picked up and shared it with Brian. We bought, 80 units, Brian? Yeah, I think it was over 80 some units we were able to pick up. These are a little bit of higher end item. They were, I think cost was like $90 a unit or something like that. So for, I forget, but I'm able to find items like that. So we're not just buying, it's five here, five. We're buying 60, 70, sometimes 100, but you can list them for sale and send them FBM. Oh man. I mean, you're turning your money around real quick. That's kind of fun. It's like that instant satisfaction, so to say, where, so I do enjoy that, but the consistency you can get, especially in the wholesale world, I respect that because you can start getting some items that you can just kind of keep your inventory up and you just keep buying them. So there's that lower margins, but the consistency and the sell-through rates that you can start to kind of see, and then you're not worried about a price tanking issue. We're not worried. You just see that it goes and it goes and it goes and it goes. And I think I talked to a friend the other day that's not doing the business anymore. There's a couple speed bumps, and I think people hit them at different thresholds as their career goes on or their Amazon journey goes on. But once you make it over that one hump, you're good for a while. There's going to be another one, right? And so when you can get over that, and wholesale items are hard at first and they're not the best, but you can find wholesale items with good margins. It's a little bit more of a treasure hunt. But when you find them, they're well worth it. And then hopefully you can keep going. And that's again, like for the brand relationship for me, if you've got that locked up, you've got it. And then you can just keep improving on that.
Right. Right. So you do get better at the method that you invest your time, and you can find like profitable items, any type of sourcing method, depending on, your personal preferences. Now talking about, like you said, like you found the item for retail arbitrage, you're able to sell them immediately on FBM. For your businesses, do you mostly do FBA or FBM?
I try to stay FBA. That is my preferred method. And then sometimes this guy here on the other camera will talk me into some crazy FBM stuff. And next thing it's, 200 orders a day or something silly. And I'm pulling, I can't pull my hair out, but if I did, I would. Yeah, primarily for me, I prefer FBA.
And what about you, Brian?
Same here, FBA, except during Q4, because can't get stuff in fast enough. And if you want to sell lots, you have to do FBM, unfortunately, when it comes to Q4. Closer and closer to Christmas, the more FBM you're doing.
What about like other selling seasons? Like let's say a Prime Day, maybe in July, or like other times of the year, like does it make sense to do FBM, during the busier times of the year, like according to the Amazon calendar, or what's your experience?
Me personally, I would say during those times, I would much rather have a lot of products in stock in FBA ahead of time for them. If I know that a Prime Day is coming up, I'd much rather do that. But, if, say, your method's retail arbitrage and you pick up some really good products, it may be wise if you know that one of those days are coming up in a couple days that you're not going to get it into Amazon in time, FBM may be the way to go. That's at least what I think about it.
For my point of view, I don't stress over it. Not yet. Maybe next year. My whole business kind of model is more slow and steady wins the race. For other, like I said, I'll get sucked into the excitement of Q4 because it's just crazy. But typically throughout the rest of the year, I don't really stress too much about those types of things. If I have a product that I'm getting on a continual basis and I think it's going to excel during that season, Sure. We'll try to make sure we have more in stock, but I don't stress myself out over that time or go extra miles to make it happen.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. So for basically like for FBM, you kind of focus on like the really busy season. If you can't get the product in time for the holidays, then that's when you would do FBM, move more products. We've heard people do FBM as well when they're testing out a product just to see if it can sell faster rather than having to send it into FBA and wait for the time that it takes to ship in as well. And then they want to check the listing to see if there's anybody who's winning the buy box with FBM. When you guys first started, like, what do you think is the best for beginners?
I think beginners, honestly, or someone new, obviously RA and FBM is going to get you your money the fastest, right? That is going to be your single easiest way with the lowest overhead. You can do it with minimal investment in tools. It's a great way to learn because like you said, I still do I'll sell some stuff FBM for testing. I still do that. And that is just a great way you can kind of see, is this going to be good? How's it going to work out? Sometimes there's multiple listings, right? Or a different variation of a multi-pack, a three-pack, a six-pack. So testing them out on FBM is always a great way to go. But I think new people starting off, because Brian's probably going to be opposite, but I'm addicted highly, probably need therapy for RA. I would say RA, FBM, and you, especially if you don't have a lot of capital, right? Because that this game changes differently if you're walking in the door with 50K in the bank that you can spend on the business compared to someone starting off with $500, $600, $1,000. It's two different, you know.
Yeah, Brian? I agree. That's the old classic churn and burn with RA and FBM. And especially because you can see the results a lot quicker, you can get your money back faster. And when you get that money back, you can then go buy more products and keep rolling it over and over. And then once you build up enough capital, that's whenever you can really start to excel in these other methods.
Yeah. Now, Joe, moving on here, I'm wondering, why did you purchase a warehouse?
Oh, I don't know, because I'm crazy. That's a great question. I didn't buy one. So let me just, I rent a warehouse just in case the owner's watching this video. I don't want him to think I bought it because he wants me to. I'm very fortunate. So why did I, number one, when we started the business off, we were growing pretty quickly. I think, you know, from 10,000 to 20,000 to 30,000 a month. Like my basement of my house was had a nice little bar, had arcade games. And the one day I walked down in my basement and I couldn't find it. I couldn't see my full size Galaga machine. I couldn't find it because it was buried under Nike hoodies and Nike clothes. And, you know, my bar we moved the bar to put in folding tables. And so number one, for me, it was, because I was going to take this seriously at that point. It was not just a fun thing. I was fortunate to have a friend that had the warehouse, and it was just about perfect. The space that he has available or had available was perfect. I mean, absolutely perfect. The price point is, so I'm really lucky in that sense. And then we've grown and we use more and more of the space as we've grown. But I do like having hands-on. I do like seeing the products, like touching the products. And this has also provided me an avenue to help other people, help other sellers. I can bring products in. We can store it. We can ship it for them. I'm not a prep center. I am not in business yet. But for friends and family type, yeah, we'll handle stuff and kind of move stuff around for them.
Got it. Yeah. So it started out, you wanted to get your space back, like reclaim your space, and then move the products to somewhere else. And then this way, you know, you could live life, you know, the way you wanted to, instead of having products everywhere around the house. This one's for Brian. Like, how did you learn about how to sell on Amazon?
Honestly, I started out with eBay and Poshmark. I was going to estate sales with my wife, and we would go to yard sales and stuff like that. And I just started getting into like the treasure hunt, honestly. And from there, I started watching YouTube videos and a lot of resellers for eBay and stuff like that, watching them, learning about different types of things that you can buy to resell. And then I stumbled upon one day just an Amazon one. And I was like, huh, I didn't think that normal people like you and I could get into that. You know, it's like, I just, I would have thought that that would be reserved for the big companies and the big brands. But the thing is, the opportunity's there and there's people showing you on YouTube how to do it. So I used the free content I could to learn, and I spent about a year just practicing really hard at it. And then that's when I decided, okay, I can take it seriously.
And Joe, what are some of the most common beginner mistakes that you've seen people make that's easily preventable?
Let's talk about my mistakes. I don't know really. I think some mistakes are good. I think some mistakes you don't want to prevent because that's how you learn. But you don't want to put yourself in a position financially that it could cause problems, right? So buying the wrong product in the beginning, I still do it, right? I mean, we still buy stuff. That's okay. Those mistakes are going to happen. I don't know what mistakes that, you know, you could prevent, meaning there's so much free content out there nowadays, right? There's just so much. So swallow up some of that free content, but then try, but don't over exceed your comfort zone, whether it's financial or stress level. Don't be afraid to jump in and start doing. I know a lot of people that kind of talk about it, but they don't actually do it. But really the biggest, you know, going forward, being a mistake is just don't overextend. Don't rush it if you're not, you know, and if it's comfortable and it's good, then, you know, scale large. But if it's not, it's okay to scale slower. It's okay to be have your 9-to-5 and your full time if you do, right? And still have and enjoy the business. So I don't know if that really answered the question great, but I
yeah, for sure. Like basically you don't want to overstress yourself and then give yourself like tons of pressure, you know, competing with other sellers, like, oh, you know, I got to grow this amount. Yeah. I'm not doing well, you know, like where it becomes miserable and you're not happy. This was for Brian. What are the keys to scaling up on Amazon? Like for you?
For me, I would say, I guess this kind of ties into a little bit about what Joe just said, taking things slow from the start. You really want to make sure that especially first 6 months, even up to like, I took a year before I felt really comfortable. I did as much free research as I could. I used very little money. I made sure not to go spending on credit cards and never pay interest on credit cards for any of this stuff, especially when you're learning. And once you get to the point where you've spent enough time doing that, that's whenever you can really start to grow, because one day it will click, you know, and you will spend all this time and you'll be like, why the heck did I take all this time to do this? Couldn't I have just done this from the start? No, because if you do it from the start and you try and scale too quickly, those mistakes that you make that Joe was just mentioning, you know, if you make the mistakes early on when things don't cost a lot, then you can learn from them. And then once you start to grow from there, you can be more confident about your decision.
Pacing yourself while you scale up. And this is for both of you guys. You guys talked, Joe said you talked about like working on 9-to-5 jobs. How do you guys manage running your Amazon business while having your 9-to-5? I mean, a lot of people definitely, they have commitments, they have family. Like how does it work for you guys? How do you make it work?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's tough because my 9-to-5 requires my undivided attention. So I don't have flexibility during the day or whatever hours I might be working. My 9-to-5, I say 9-to-5, most of my days are 10-hour days. The trip I'm on now, I haven't had much less than a 12-hour day since I've been on this trip. So it is tough, but it's, and I'll be honest, I'm probably not, it's organization, really. It's organization and processes. So I'm not very organized. That is a struggle. So probably another good reason I work well with Brian. Brian's very organized. So he helps guide me sometimes on and some stuff where we can shoot stuff by each other and come up with a new idea. Like I think we were talking scheduling and tasking software one day. And Brian was trying something. I said, oh, I tried this the other, you know, and so he tried something. I tried something. And we both tried. I'm like, hey, so now we're all in the same, we're using the same, you know, same product and stuff like that works. And that's, again, why networking and talking with others, because that was a piece of software that helps us stay helps me stay organized and task-based. And then it's also good because we can send stuff to the virtual assistant who works different hours, you know, to say. So we still try to communicate once a day, if not twice, three times a week. But now using systems and processes to help. And I'm still not great at it, but I'm getting better.
What about you, Brian?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think that the way to do it is the key is really staying organized as best you can. And for different people, that looks differently. Joe and I, like Joe said, we use a tool that is like a to-do list kind of thing. So we basically have a to-do list where our virtual assistants have recurring tasks that they complete. We can see when they're being completed. And in addition to those, something that I wish I would have done so much long ago that I really only did these past couple months is generate standard operating procedures for my business. So I have created in PowerPoint and then save them as PDFs, and I link them to all of my virtual assistants' tasks. And what that helps me do is it keeps them on task. If they ever have a question or they're confused about something, they can go look at those. And then whenever you bring new people on, especially because we're working 9-to-5 jobs, we now have a resource to give them. So I do that in addition to creating videos of myself doing specific tasks or showing how to source. So really just building up a, treating it like an actual business, creating processes, making sure that you're keeping track of, if you have employees, keeping track of them, and just staying organized is I think the key.
So staying organized, having systems in place, standard, you know, operation procedures really play a big role to train the team members and bring people on board to help you when you have, you know, when you're working full time, especially when your work requires your undivided attention as well. Got it. So, Brian, why is it necessary to use a repricer in your opinion?
Unfortunately, I think the answer to that is it's necessary because everyone else is. And if you're not, absolutely no way that you're going to be able to manage the prices on all of your listings, especially as you grow. I think once you get up to 50 listings or so, it just quickly becomes unmanageable because people are hopping in and out of listings all the time. And if you're not on top of constantly changing your prices, then you're never going to get the buy box. And that's the key to success, unfortunately, on Amazon, is the buy box.
Yeah, we all know whoever owns a buy box gets more than 80% of the sales when there's a buy box. So it's really important and critical. And like you mentioned, like if you're not using a repricer, somebody else is, and you know Amazon's awarding that sales to that person. Now, Joe, I want to ask, like, why did you pick BeQuil for your repricer?
Well, I actually did trial a couple others. Didn't click with me. It just didn't click, right? And I'm going to say too, it sometimes I don't have the time to sit down and spend 3 hours trying to learn something new. Plus I have the attention span of a, you know, what was it? You know? So for me, when I got into BeQuil, I found it really simple to get started. Now that being said, right, to get started and up and running, it's super simple, but there's just so much more. Like I said earlier, I keep learning new stuff. I keep finding, you know, new little tricks within there, you know, and that, and I think the other thing, with the repricer in general, not a mistake beginners make, but we all start off and we get involved with other people. People tell you, oh, you should do this right away, or you should do this. One thing I should have done sooner is listening to people is get a repricer. So that's why I got a repricer, why it's important. Because people are telling you, you can't monitor those listings all day. You can't keep an eye on what's going on. Because if you're doing that, there's so many other things that are probably more important. Repricing is very important, but that's why it's important to have a system that's quality that can help take care of that. So then you can spend your time buying more products or, you know, landing new brands or whatever it might be.
Awesome. Has your sales increased since using a repricer?
Oh, that was almost instantaneous. Like that's one of those moments where I think Brian said, I'll adjust my prices. I'm still doing this. I got 3 minutes, you know, and because you think you have it under control, even, you know, like 50, 60, 70 listings, whatever, you don't. You think you do, but you don't. Run the repricer. For me with BeQuil, the results were instantaneous. I mean, literally by the next day, I was like, whoa, because I was seeing the results. So it is nice that, and forgive me, I just don't remember if you still, same setup if for, you know, customers. I don't know if there's what the plans are anymore because it's just part of my systems now. I don't look, but that you can start off at a level where you can get a taste for it and you can see if you like
it. Right. You can do a free trial and
that's really nice.
See
then
how
you say,
it works
okay,
for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then proof is in the pudding, as they say, and you'll see it. Try it, You got nothing to lose. Even starting off with just a few, can try a couple conditionals, do some AI, and it works. It's just that easy.
Brian, what have you heard about BQL so far?
I heard about the AI repricing rules and stuff like that. And especially us working full time, stuff like that is like super important for sellers. Just being able to have something that you can sit it at whatever AI repricing rule you want and then forget about it, you know, and just having a peace of mind that something is always going there, and the option to also deal with suppressed listings as they come up, because those can happen randomly and you may not know when a listing is going suppressed. You don't get a notification that, oh, this listing is now suppressed. So having those kinds of things in BQL, I think is really
cool. Well, that's great to hear. Joe, like, how do you pick your repricing rules now? And did you change since you scaled up?
Well, I use way more AI than when I first started, because I found it worked and it was easy. When I've got so many other things to do,
was it the AI equalizer?
I typically start off with AI equalizer. Yep. We'll set it to AI equalizer. I apologize for that. That's the standard item. Now, certain items that I'll bring in, if I know that I've got a lot of them and I need to move them, right, we'll switch up the repricer based off of that. Or I have an item that I have a bunch of, but I'm not in a rush to sell. I will put maybe a profit booster on there and let's see what happens. And maybe just let it run for a week and see if I'll take a look at the sales volume and compare it to, you know, the pricing we're getting. So if the volume is still good and we're making more, that's great. And if the volume drops a little, and depending on the item, right, if it's a seasonal item or if it's an expiration date type item, then we can adjust the rule down a little to maybe increase it. So that's what I really like about that customization of. And even though you have the AI rules, you can still even customize those, which is really neat. And I've got so much more to learn. Like, I think I could probably spend, I don't know, half a year probably getting training and still learn little tricks and great little ways to manipulate the system.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is you don't need to know everything. Now you could just start setting using the AI, repricing settings, and you could see the results. And you don't have to do too many tweaks. You know, that's going to help. And you don't have to go into all the advanced settings if you don't need to. And you can still get good results, like you mentioned. And then for Brian, when do you recommend the audience to start using a repricer? You said around 50 listings. Is that what you said earlier?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, between 50 and 100 listings is where it really starts to get out of control. Whenever you're first starting out, you know, that is a big expense and you need to be able to justify it. I wouldn't say just hop right into it from day one, especially because you need to understand how prices are changing on Amazon, you know, and what's happening with other sellers' prices and stuff, just to understand how the whole thing works. But yeah, I would say a general rule of thumb would probably be 50 to 100 listings is where you really should consider getting a repricer if you want to take things seriously.
You know, back to Joe, like, what's your strategy for winning the buy box?
I use the repricer.
That's easy.
That's easy. I just use BQL. I mean, winning the buy box is, the buy box is the great mystery, right? And we all think we know the tweaks or the right way to do it. And I'm not that smart, but I'm smart enough to know to use tools or resources to help me manage that stuff. So for me, using something with AI technology or machine learning AI, such as like BQL, it's just, I'm not that smart. Why you have all that in place? Why not use it? So it still does take, now I joke like set it and forget it, which I have done in some items, but you still have to go in and kind of keep an eye on it from time to time. You want to look and see where you're at. So when in the buy box, sometimes it might take a little adjustment or change in the rule because the market shifts, seasonal items coming out of season, you know, beginning of season, right? And one thing I really want to get better at is setting some of those parameters so it automates those changes That's something yet I have not explored in depth enough to even talk about it and be cool. But I know there's those, it's available. So that's, I'm looking for the growth, and that's one of the things I looked forward to growing.
Right. There's a lot of these advanced settings you could automate when market conditions change. So we have those under condition of repricing advanced rules as well. And then for Brian, what do you wish you knew earlier in your Amazon selling journey?
What do I wish I knew earlier? Joe,
you wish you knew me.
That's right.
You wish you knew me sooner.
I would say the power of networking, honestly. That's the one biggest thing. I did spend about a year where I was just kind of practicing, not really like taking Amazon very seriously, but just trying to learn about it and everything. I can see how if I would have started networking from that day that I started doing, go and join a Facebook group. There's plenty of them. You just go search Amazon FBA on Facebook. Go join a Facebook group. I'm sure Be Cool has some groups where there's lots of sellers you could talk to, you know, just something like that, that really, really makes you succeed.
So seeing, you know, some of the challenges that other people are facing, and for example, you might see like how some person has the same issue trying to ungate a product. Maybe they have experience on this area. Like it really helps. Like it might save you a lot more time and you might meet other people. You don't feel like you're, you know, going alone.
Right. 100%.
And for Joe, what's the most important bit of knowledge that you could share with a new seller if they're watching this?
Take in as much free content. There's just so much free content. find people you kind of align with. There's a lot of great info out there, and there's different personalities putting out that content. And so how that gets delivered, it's just, you'll find something you're more, you know, a person or a brand that you're more comfortable with. But watch, listen, but try. Don't be afraid to open that account up, start selling some stuff, right? The first item, when my daughter and I started this, didn't know what we were doing. And I tell the story because it's kind of funny, but we bought some light bulbs in a box store. And these light bulbs were on clearance. We listened, didn't know what we were doing. It's our first time. Like, let's just try it, right? We did it in the store, listed them through the Seller Central app even. Then I was using the app, and we listed them. We left the store. We bought them. By the time we hit the car, two of the, I think it was 7 or 9 units sold. By the time we got home, they were all sold. What lessons did we learn there? We tried, we succeeded, and we still didn't know what we were doing because we sold them too cheap. And that's why they sold so fast, because we didn't know Keepa well enough and we didn't know, right? So it was still a little success, but it was a light bulb. But that's why it's choked. The light bulb went off, right? And for us, when it was like really cool. And that's what I say to new people. Learn and listen, but go try. Just get in. Those light bulbs, I think we bought them at $20 a piece. They were selling for like 60 or something. There's like a Wi-Fi. But it was a low investment. And we learned, right? And we learned, we made mistakes, even though we sold them. We priced them way too low. But just try. And then reach out to the network and build the community. And
so if you're watching this video, make sure to just go out and try. Make small improvements. You have some low cost investment you can continue to tweak before you go into making the larger purchases, the larger amounts. Then you have a lot more experience when you're selling these products. Last question here. Where can we find you guys on social media? And it's for Brian.
So I'm at fba.brian on Instagram. And we have a show called Coffee and Commerce that Joe and I actually started not too long ago. So it's every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And that's on the Coffee and Commerce YouTube channel. And then we also have Coffee and Commerce Show is the Instagram.
Fantastic. So, hey guys, you're watching this. Make sure to go and follow. We have them in the description below. Definitely go check out their YouTube channel, Coffee and Commerce, to get more knowledge and tips. You know, we'll be able to share this information. And we also made a video on their channel regarding some of the most commonly asked questions for a repricer. So you guys can definitely check that out. Go visit their channel and see that. Thanks again for your time, guys. I look forward to seeing you guys later. Cheers.
Thanks, Samuel.
Yeah, thanks, Samuel.
Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Hey, Amazon sellers. I hope you enjoyed this incredible episode with our fantastic guests, Coffee and Commerce's Brian and Joe. To watch the full interview where they talk about their Amazon seller journey, including how they collab together on Amazon and how they balance an Amazon store with a full-time job, make sure to visit and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And don't forget to check out other podcasts on our channel to learn all the top tips and tricks for your Amazon business. If you have an Amazon business and need help winning the buy box to get more sales, join our community and try out a 14-day free trial of the best Be Cool AI repricer and become the next Amazon top seller. See you soon. Thank you for listening. If you would like to stay connected with our weekly new episodes, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, follow us on Spotify, or any other streaming platform you prefer. Let's continue our journey to become the next Amazon top seller.